and welcome to the official Lost Audio Podcast Summer Edition. We are here with executive producers Eddie Kitsis and Adam Horowitz. Welcome, guys.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for having us.
Now, this is the first time that we've had you guys on the podcast, but obviously you guys have been on the show since, season one.
Yeah, Adam and I have been on the show since, I think the first episode we came in on was Numbers, was the first time we wrote on the show.
What was that like coming on specifically at that time? Because that was kind of a seminal episode.
Well, it was frightening. We came on the show as fans, so it was kind of like being fans of the Rolling Stones and being asked to join them, but play the next day. And so we thought, well, at least the first few weeks they won't ask us to do anything. Damon and Carlton will just be like, you guys sit on the bench and watch how it's done. But like day two, they came to us and said, hey, can you guys, we're doing this Hurley episode. Can you come up with we want to do like a Locke Claire story. Do you have any idea for like a 3-beat story? And we came up with the idea that maybe Locke is building her a crib, but you don't know what they're, right. In true Lost fashion, you don't know what they're building till the end. And they said, great, write it. So I went home that night and I was really upset. My wife at dinner goes, what's wrong? I said, they want us to write this Locke Claire episode. She goes, oh, so Claire comes back? And I had forgotten that airing Claire was on TV. And I was like, well, why don't you worry less about whether or not Claire comes back and more about your husband? But
right?
She was so mad that I ruined it for her that Claire actually came back from being kidnapped.
At one point in the podcast, we were talking with Damon and Carlton again about you guys, and they said that you guys paid your dues on the locker room shows. What shows was he referring to?
Well, Adam and I did a lot of...
To go back even further, I think we were made fun of in locker rooms a lot, but...
Yes, Adam is still being put inside lockers. No,
we
started out. We did a lot of high school shows came to Lost.
We did a couple tours of duty on the WB. Right. We worked on a show which was actually a phenomenal experience called Popular for 2 years with Ryan Murphy, who's amazing,
and created Nip Talk and the upcoming Glee. ABC will be happy that we're promoting his shows.
And then we came on to Felicity.
Fox Tuesday nights. No, then we wrote on Felicity, which didn't have lockers as much, but
a lot of angst.
We did Life as We Know It for ABC.
It
was a great show. We did a lot of really cool high school shows,
you're skipping the most important one we did, which was Black Sash on the WB, which is where we met Carlton. It was a show that lasted a very short time, but it did introduce us to Carlton.
It's where we fell in love, and that is how we got to Lost. But yeah, we always said, can we find a hatch where it's a high school and there's just a row of lockers? Because we're really good at writing scenes by lockers. But we actually got to.
There were lockers.
A locker scene when in the lock flashback, and I remember like Liz Sarnoff was writing the scene, and I ran up to her and I was like, well, you have to put a Geronimo Jackson sticker in his locker. It's like, trust me, let me just decorate the locker. That's all I care about.
But the thing about like doing those kind of shows, though, it was like we did so many of them. But the thing that I think helped us for Lost is they really are all really character-centric shows. And it's like Felicity, for example, is a show where you just had Ben Nolan Felicity and you had to figure out stories that were really purely about character.
And that's the thing that Damon and Carlton always push, which is Lost is not about finding hatches. It's a character show. And the very first thing we always ask is, what does a character want?
Right.
And then you can worry about mythology. And so that, at the end of the day, is what it's about, is the character and emotion.
And you guys were writing partners from the very beginning.
Though. Yes.
Since sophomore year of college when I did his homework.
Yeah.
Is that how you guys truly met?
Well, actually, how we met was we were in a film class.
At what school?
University of Wisconsin. Yeah. Go Badgers. And we were sitting there, and I was, we were doing our Super 8 films, and this was going to be my opus, and I was in this Buñuel phase at the end, so it was very pretentious. And I was sitting there on a Saturday morning, and I ran the film, and it was upside down. So I turned to the kid next to me, and I said, hey, is yours broken? Is your thing broken? And Adam reached over.
I just turned the film over, and suddenly it was all fine.
Right, and so I was like, well, this kid's got something. And funny enough is a week later you had to have a partner in class, and I went up to Adam and said, do you want to partner up? And he looked at me like an incompetent.
I said, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You didn't know how to thread your film.
But I wore him down.
But ultimately he wore me down.
Yeah.
How does that work when you guys first joined the show? Was there kind of like a major download session?
It was more like being thrown into like the ocean, and like there's sharks and you're just trying to catch up. And we had watched every episode and were huge fans of the show, and they were great to us and all that. But it's like when you come in to a show in the middle of a season, it's going full steam ahead, and the train is not stopping for anything. So it's playing catch up as you go.
But as far as like, did we get the presidential download? Like we did have a meeting right before yes. Christmas break. Adam and I had it with Damon and Carlton, and they kind of like shared a lot of the secrets, so it kind of felt like, oh, so that's what it was.
Like, for example, they told.
Yes.
They joked it in the first or second season when we did the podcast. They were like, you know, if the show were canceled tomorrow, we have, you know, a glass jar in the writer's room with the last pages, with the pages explaining everything about the series, and that the monkey will read them. He'll just turn towards the screen and read the pages if we were ever canceled before our time.
But They told you about the talking monkey.
Well, the truth is there is that glass jar, but Adam and I stole it last year and are holding it ransom.
Right.
So.
Well, I think that kind of actually transitions perfectly. Speaking of the glass jar, we had during Comic-Con, there was a box with a key and a taser and all that stuff. I understand you guys had a little bit of a hand in what went on at Comic-Con this year.
This is the first year we've ever been involved in Comic-Con, and this is the first year we actually ever went. And I don't know, about a month ago, Damon and Carlton asked us, it was the last Comic-Con, would we help out in coming up with, you know, what they were going to do and help writing some of it?
It's the Damon and Carlton Variety Hour. It was
so they went to the Bruce Valanches of the staff, which is me and Adam.
Right. So, we kind of hunkered down with them and Greg Nation, Samantha Thomas, and Noreen O'Toole kind of got to work.
And to be fair, they're the ones who do all the hard
they
work.
Did the
like
heavy
we
lifting.
Just come in and we're like, oh, you know, a bit about Nestor getting makeup. We'll write it. Hurley yeah. and we'll write that, and then they're the ones that actually have to go out and find the sound effects, find the
actually,
cutting, and call all the people.
No, we had the luxury of just like
showing
trying
out.
To come up yeah. with funny bits, and then someone else had to do the heavy lifting of
right.
realizing it.
But there was a lot of planning. I mean, we really, you know, every day would sit with all of them and literally just planned every line down to like, you know, it was like the presidential schedule. It was like from, you know, from 11 to 11:15 is this pod. And we literally, I mean, Damon, literally, I was writing like, you know, 11:15 to 11:30 on the wall.
And everything was really scripted. Like, for example, the stuff with Jorge and Michael Emerson was really scripted. Now, those guys then took what we wrote and they went off and kind of did their own spin on
they
it.
They made it better, but in defense, we will take the credit.
We'll
so
take
anything
all
we
the
found
credit.
Funny they said was us.
Was us.
But it's also kind of fun for them. It looked like, I mean, they got to play with their persona a little bit and you know, Michael got to be himself-ish, although, he can't help but slip into Ben.
Yes. Yeah. No, he was frightening and awesome all at the same time. Well, no, they both were they're great, you know? We actually, when we saw the very first cut of that audition, Adam and I just looked at it and we just started laughing. And Damon called it, like the whole room started laughing that we realized if you watch the Comic-Con video, we show him, then we cut to it says Hurley audition because we laughed so hard. We said, no one's going to hear anything. You
right.
need to give at least 20 seconds of them laughing or
building in the laugh.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, because just the look of his face is just so – and that outfit and the bandana, like it's just – it's fantastic.
That's why we had to hold on that shot of him there before we cut to the card.
And there's three more right. minutes of that.
Yeah,
like
really,
that was cut down, but he did like two full scenes. Like you don't even
– oh, yeah.
You know, it's really
that's,
something.
That's hilarious.
Like
yeah.
the second part of it where he reacts to the blood and all that, like there's a whole other bit in there. It was just – you know, we were under a real time crunch with everything.
Now, one of the things that I thought was that Lost is continually done, though, at Comic-Con is you all have really raised the bar in terms of what people expect at Comic-Con from the first year to now. I mean, most of the other Comic-Con panels that I was at are literally just a panel of people sitting up there and someone passes around the mic and then one person hogs the entire thing.
That is a tribute to Damon and Carlton, who really, like I said, we have not been involved in any Comic-Con. But what is great about it and what Adam and I were so excited about writing for it is they're not afraid to make fun of themselves. You know, Damon was not afraid to have Josh Holloway pretend he was J.J. Abrams and not know who Damon Lindelof is. And when you can write for guys who are willing to make fun of themselves, then you can have fun.
Right.
And I think that and the two things those guys understand is I really feel like they understand the crowd and they understand our viewers really well.
And I think the other part of it is what you're saying is about how there's been such great reaction to Comic-Con's past. There was certainly felt amongst all of us this pressure of this is the last Comic-Con and let's do something special for the fans, which led to the notion of this was a fan appreciation Comic-Con, and Damon and Carlton really pushed all of us to try to like come up with the most fun, coolest hour we could do and cram as much cool stuff into it as we could possibly.
And for us, there was less pressure because if it was a complete bomb, you know, we weren't on stage. So we could just sneak out the back and no one would have ever known.
Were you guys watching from the back then?
We were watching. Yeah,
we were doing it Barton Fink style.
Yeah, we were literally on the side, mouthing every word.
What was it like for you guys? Because this was your first Comic-Con.
It was the greatest week ever.
It was pretty awesome.
We want to live in Comic-Con.
We do.
We didn't realize that Comic-Con equaled better than spring break. So it was fantastic.
Spring break for year-round.
Yeah. Be awesome. You know, it's also fun for us to see a lot of friends that we don't get to see because of the our busy schedule. But, you know, their shows are down there and things like that.
Now, buried in the panel, though, I mean, amongst all the fun and the zapping and stuff like that, they look like there were a couple of Easter eggs. I mean, fans are obviously already spinning, but is there anything that you would point them towards?
I would say the thing about it is that it's of the sort of the filmed bits we did and that we showed there. If fans have any questions about what was going on in them and why the bits were playing the way they were,
that was
purely intentional. We're very well aware that it was an Oceanic commercial where it said 30 years perfect safety record,
right. Which is really weird. And you know, I think Hurley's grilled chicken. I think you can count on a grilled chicken at your Mr. Clucks. Right, so if you go to Mr. Clucks, there will be.
And Hurley's saying he's had nothing but good luck since he won the lottery.
Very weird things.
These are all things that
may or may not have anything to do with the show. And that's the thing with us at Comic-Con is you never know what to believe and what not to believe. And the fun thing about the show is, you know, sometimes the littlest things that people dismiss are actually the biggest things. I remember we were doing a DVD signing season 2, and someone came and they said, "What's in the hatch?" And Damon signed on there. On their DVD, keep pushing the button every 108 minutes. And they left. And they had no idea that they were sitting on the exact...
No, he was even more specific. He said, "There's a guy in the hatch pushing a button every 108 minutes or the world will end."
And he wrote it on a DVD and he gave it to them. And whoever that person is had the secret of the hatch without realizing it.
Now that's cool.
That being said, I can't say that anything we did this year, I can't confirm or deny. I
can
just say that,
as
always, in the most Lostian way, there are Easter eggs and there are not Easter eggs.
And we did go into this Comic-Con wanting the audience to react in a certain way and to have questions. So hopefully they do.
Now, walk us through a little bit of the writing process, stepping back for a minute. I understand at the end of the season, you guys kind of do a Lost camp, and that's where the overall arc for the season is sketched out.
We used to. Now we freelance everything. We don't even work. We have actually a team of writers overseas that does everything. We just do
Doreen
Comic-Con.
And Sam all write the stuff for you.
Doreen, Sam, and Greg, they write everything. And
you just tell them what to write.
Yeah. I mean, they did such a great job on Comic-Con. We felt like, why do we even need to do the show
up this year?
Yeah. We do what's called mini camp and in between every season.
Yeah, it's usually about 3 weeks or so where we just all come in without having the pressure of we got to get a script out in a week and prep something and post something and just sit around and talk about the big arcs for the next season and have the luxury of just talking really big picture stuff and planning out in very broad sense the sort of the tentpole events of the season.
Does that mean you guys are going to have mini camp withdrawal this year? I mean, what do you think you're going to do?
You're going to do it anyway.
I could see that. You know, it's funny because the Lost writing staff is like a family and we eat lunch every day together and people always come up to me in the commissary and you're like, "Aren't you sick of each other?" And I said, "Yes." And at the same time, no, it's like a family. Right. I mean, it's like I love these people. So the thought of not being able to have lunch every day with the writers on the staff is really sad.
For us, it'll be nearly 6 years of our life on this show. And, you know, in 6 years working with Damon and Carlton and nearly as much with Liz and all these great people on the staff. And it's like there's this weird mixture of emotion going into the season of it's so exciting to finally get to this stuff that we've been moving towards all this time, but also it's a sadness of like we're finishing it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the In Memoriam, the very first cut we saw, we were sitting in Carlton's office and I remember just watching it, we were laughing. And then I looked at Adam and I started to get really sad because I was like, wow, look how far, you know, the show has come.
And it was from that In Memoriam bit at Comic-Con too was an interesting thing for us too because it was like it started out funny. You see Froger getting hit with the arrow and, you know, Gary Troop going into the plane and that kind of stuff. But then it gets more and more serious as we get along to different characters and ending with the Charlie thing, which was really emotional and I think really played really well in the room.
You guys are, of course, are now executive executive producers. Is it, I mean, like, are you still focused on just getting through Lost, or have you even begun to look forward to what life is like after Lost?
I think there'll be a nap. Right. Will be the first thing.
I mean, yeah, right. You know, obviously you look past it and wonder what it'll be. But right now we're also, I think, in denial that there is a time after Lost because we love it so much. So there's a huge part of, you know, that the two of us are in denial that it's ending this year.
We're doing the spinoff Hurley and the Trons, his Vietnamese servants.
Or our Sunday morning show, Locke and the Monster. Saturday morning,
right.
I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of Davy and Goliath, but with Locke.
Do you guys find that you have certain characters that you write more to the show on? Is it kind of breakdown like that, or does everyone write everything?
Everyone writes everything, but I would say that we stole Hurley. You know, after Numbers, we were like, we're going to steal him.
Right.
And so we've stole Hurley.
The thing that's great about the show as writers is that it's like you get to do so many different things, and it's like one week you know writing Sawyer being Sawyer, another week it's a Jack, you know, and he's Jack. It's like you go, you know, and they're writing Jack and Sawyer are very different things, but they're both have their own reward.
And it's great because like we wrote The Economist, so we got to write Saeed traveling around the world killing people,
which is awesome.
At the same respect, we got to write Dave, which is Hurley in an insane asylum with an imaginary friend. And the fact that one show lets us write both things, because most shows are you're in a hospital. Every week you're writing different characters, but they're doctors.
There's a bet in the writer's office, and no one really can remember what the bet was.
Oh, no.
But
Liz lost it.
Liz Sarnoff, who's also an executive producer on the show, lost the bet. And the payoff of the bet is that one of the scenes from an episode Eddie and I wrote in season 3, DOC, will be performed this afternoon.
Very exciting.
By Liz, and I will be playing the role of Juliet.
Yeah. Eddie has to play Juliet. Liz has
It's Lost Theater. It's Friday afternoon Lost
and this
Theater.
And you do have the eyes. I can.
Yeah. So, and I have the lab coat, and we just need to find the medical hatch, and we'll be fine.
Right.
But yeah, that is the afternoon.
And that is one of the way we find ways to progress.
Well, you guys also have ping pong. There's a couple of video game machines. Who gets that stuff when it ends?
I have no idea, but all I know is that there was a lot of Galaga in season 3.
In fact, the name of the sub originally was going to be – in fact, did we name it that? I can't remember. We wanted to name it the Galaga because we were playing so much Galaga.
Damon and I got into a vicious friendly competition on Galaga, which
Adam and Damon literally would play for 20 hours a day.
The problem became that we both got so good at the game, and I will – concede that Damon ultimately did come off with a high score, although there is an asterisk attached to that,
right.
Which is that he passed a million and then it goes back to zero. So the high score of mine of 970,000 is the one that's up on the board,
right.
But he actually did get the high score.
So was this a bit like your old zone King of Kong type competition?
Kind of.
But there's no kill screen.
There was no kill screen, and by the end of it, it got to the point where we had both gotten so good that like when one of us would start the game, our first man would take a half an hour.
Right.
So the other one would have to go off and do whatever. And it just became too much of a time suck.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because there we do have a lot of toys in the office, but I think it helps the creative process because a lot of people will come up with scenes, you know, while they're doing something else. But, you know, you're in that writer's room and it's intense. And so right. I think, you know, as I said, we're like a family. We also like to have fun.
I think that's all the time we have for this podcast. Thank you guys for joining us. And of course, I guess a shout out to Sam, Noreen, and Greg, you know, for everything that they did in Comic-Con as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the three of them are heroes.
Sam, Noreen, and Greg were the heart and soul of that panel and really, really worked harder than you can imagine.
I mean, when you see someone walk in with, I have 20 different sounds for the taser, and that they actually spent their night coming up with 20 different sounds for the taser. So much, much love for the three of them, as well as our fearless coaches and leaders and mentors, Damon and Carlton.
Well, thank you again, guys, for joining us. This has been the official Lost audio podcast. Summer edition.
Thank you.
Thank you.